ESPN LA 710.
Welcome to ESPN LA 710. I'm LaFern Cusack. Thanks so much for joining me. For more information, please log on online, ESPNLA.com, and go to the experience page to download podcasts or check me out on Twitter at LaFern Cusack. Today, we're talking sports movies. This is going to be a fun show. In studio, I have with me the chief correspondent for Hollywood Film Festival and owner of Movie Review and More, Brian Sebastian. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for giving me a call and texting me and inviting me.
Yes. So, Brian, tell us how you got into the whole realm of loving movies so much that you would rather stay home than go out and experience other things.
Absolutely. That's very, very true. You remember when we had video stores? Well, that's yes. When it started. I started a Tower Records back in 1987 when I was on Power 106. And you remember when people wanted to make that transition over the TV? You had Chevy Chase, you had Arsenio, you had Joan Rivers trying to do that stuff. I'm like, if these guys can't do it, and I didn't want to be on TV, I'm like, well, what am I going to do? So I went into voiceovers. So I still do voiceovers because I love it. But the other thing I wanted to do when I moved to California from Connecticut, I'm like, in Westwood, where I ended up, there were 16 movie theaters, and each one of them had a different movie. I'm like, how do you see all these movies, and why are they like that? Because, you know, growing up in the East Coast, you don't have that. Mm-hmm. So I started going to see every movie. No one told me that they would open every Wednesday or Friday or whatever. And then when you get into home video, you got all these movies coming on home video.
Right.
So it's almost like watching all the stuff on Netflix. So doing all that stuff, at that point, I figured out when I was a video clerk at Tower Records or Tower Video, well, I'd have Ron Jeremy coming in. I'd have Michael Jackson coming in, Wolfman Jack, all these people. So they would always ask, what's good? And I'm like, well, aren't you guys seeing movies? Because I didn't know.
Right.
So I used to watch all these films. And then when I ended up having, you know, my own video stores with my old friend James Tsai, Extravaganza Video, I would have Chris Penn come in, Sean Penn's brother. I would have all these people coming in. What's good? So I had to watch every single thing out there. So in 1991, till this day, I have no idea how many films I saw. I just remember I watched a lot of films. So I said, I got to keep track of these things. So in 1992, I started keeping track of every single film that I've seen, and I still do it till this day.
Oh, my goodness.
I handwrite them down still.
Really?
So I know if I'm watching between 702 and 725, and I call them on home video, like watching Netflix on an iPad or something like that, I call that watching it on home video. When I go and actually go see a movie, I call it on the big screen. So I should be seeing between 16 and 26 films on the big screen a month.
A month.
And then I should be seeing between 50 to almost 100 on home video.
So you just became an expert in the field of...
Yeah. I had to figure out, well, you know, we had... You know, Leonard Maltin, who's still alive, he had Siskel and Ebert, all those people, you know, David Sheen. I knew that they didn't have time to watch the stuff. I knew they weren't seeing stuff on home video. So I developed a relationship with all the people doing things at that point. So I knew by me watching, I would order stuff. And in the old days of VHS, you made your money back 6 weeks later. So if you remember going to a video store, going to Blockbuster, you paid $3.25 for one movie. Mm-hmm. Remember the late rental fee, the late fee,
yes.
Which was like $2.50?
Yes.
That's how they got you. So I knew I put a Blockbuster out of business. I had a thing called quarter days. Every Tuesday and Thursday, once a month, I would do a thing. You come in and rent 10 movies for a quarter.
What?
Well, I knew you couldn't watch all those movies,
right.
But people would rent all these movies for a quarter, and we made the money back on the late fees. Now, Blockbuster, since they were corporate, they couldn't drop their prices or anything like that. So I learned how to maneuver marketing and doing things like that.
Oh.
To this day, that same format works. When I'm watching movies, I know these people, these critics, who if you write something for print, like Kenneth Turan for LA Times, well, he goes to see the A movie. He's not watching B movies. He just doesn't have the time.
Mm-hmm.
So they have all these, you know, B, C, and sometimes a D stringer. They watch all the lesser known independent stuff that may just open limited.
Mm-hmm.
So I was watching everything. So I would be that one, the one black guy, one guy in general, watching everything. So if you sat down and say, hey, what's good out there? I could tell you.
That's cool.
Depending where you live, what was good, because everything comes up limited.
Now, I remember getting my Blockbuster card, and I go to my friend, oh my God, I got a Blockbuster card, and mm-hmm. my friend goes, great right when it's going out of business. I was like, what?
Well, I can tell you why it went out of business. When Wayne Hunsinger ended up, you know, he wasn't a movie guy. He just got lucky. His whole thing was, it's like Starbucks. They want a Starbucks in every corner. They almost have that. Well, it came from Blockbuster. Blockbuster wanted the Blockbuster on every corner. So they put the Music Pluses in the warehouses and the towers out of business. But they couldn't touch our store, Extravaganza Video, because it was more personable. Mm-hmm. So I used to have a lot of celebrities who became friends because they trusted my judgment on film. They didn't have a lot of time. They were working on all their products. So they'd come in, hey, Brian, what's out? Can you save me 5 copies of all these movies? You right. got it. And then my whole thing is they had to be really good movies or else I look like a piece of crap. So they trusted my judgment. And then one guy came in and said, his name is Guy Rydell. And I haven't seen him in a couple years, but he does a lot of stuff with Paramount, like the paranormal films and stuff like that. He was one of my first clients that would come in.
Interesting.
And he was doing smaller independent films back in, you know, in the 90s. Mm-hmm. So he would always say, why don't you do movie reviews? And I go, well, how do you do that? He goes, I think you have to contact the MPAA. I'm like, well, I did. I had a guy on the adult side, Bill Margold. He used to do stuff on the X-rated side, but he was a real mainstream movie reviewer.
Oh, yes, that dude.
Yes, exactly. His columns were on Hollywood Express. He and I became partners. So he taught me how to do stuff on the adult side and then switch it over to the mainstream side of stuff. So dealing with stuff, I knew what to do. And when I got my official MPAA accreditation, I had it for 3 years because that was like gold at that point.
Yes.
And then you got on all the list of movie things to go do all the junkets and everything like that.
Wow.
So I never stopped with the roots from home video. So till this day, the roots of being in home video that doesn't exist anymore still works.
Now, did you see the platform changing as well?
I see everything changing. I see things that people don't see ahead of time. I'm usually a year and a half ahead, and then I have to like wait for people to catch up.
Right.
Yeah, and that can be used to be frustrating. Now I don't care because I'm like they're not getting what I'm seeing coming down. It's almost like you're preparing for the Super Bowl for next year. You've got to start a year in advance, sometimes a year and a half out for things because things change. And now with social media, you really have to be aware of things.
Exactly. So what can you share what you see for the future of filmmaking down the line?
Yeah. See, what I'm not interested in is making films. But what happens is everything comes out limited now, meaning they're going back into the well to stuff that used to be relevant during the 90s, like, you know, having The Mummy come out, Universal. They're going through all their stuff that they own because they own the content of that. Content is still king. And they want to go and use those things that they have and they could just make a remake of that. Think of Baywatch with The Rock.
Yes, there are a lot of reboots coming out this year as well. It's like, don't we have any other ideas?
They don't take chances. And The reason for that is everything is corporate. I've never been the corporate guy. Never. Because I saw what was going to happen. The longest you can stay in media someplace is 20 years. And I learned that from a friend of mine who worked at CNN. And he used to do all the junkets. And I'm like, I was always the small guy that just found his way in through publicists. And I said, no matter what, I'm going to outlast all these people. And I have. So I can do what I'm doing for another 29 years. I started 4 years ago at 33 years. Now I'm down to 29. In January, I'll be 28.
Wow.
So by the time I'm 86, I plan to beat Barbara Walters' record and Mike Wallace's record of doing all this.
Go ahead, Brian.
I mean, how many people can say that?
No, not a lot. Not a lot. Absolutely. So when you go to these films, do you pick a certain film that you go and see?
I want to see everything.
Okay.
What's difficult still is I have a problem seeing Hulu stuff and Amazon. Now, as you know, Amazon has got a lot of money. And if it weren't for women going online and shopping for Amazon and books and things like that, they wouldn't be where they are today. So women, I love empowering women. We call it gender empowerment, which is really, really good. We're in the age of Aquarius where women are key. Us men, we're supposed to be helping support you because we've had our voices for the longest time. So that's why I have 10 female co-hosts because I want them to shine. And if I'm not doing my job of making them famous and what they're doing, then I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing. I've never been that flashy, showy guy. That's not me. Yeah. I get off having more fun behind the scenes. Like I said, I'd rather stay home and watch movies.
Yeah, me too.
You know, you can relate to that.
Yeah, I can.
You know, I've never been married and I don't have any kids, so that's what I do. I'd rather be traveling or something like that.
Yes, yeah. So let's get into some films now. You know, it's Fight Weekend. So I interviewed the producers for Hands of Stone. Did you happen to see that movie?
Yep.
So what do you think about that?
I thought it was an okay film. I like De Niro, what De Niro did. His performance in that was actually really good. The movie was okay. You know, when it comes to the performances, I thought it was a good performance filmed. And I liked what the story of Roberto Duran, because that's an important story to tell. Look at his record. My God, one of the best boxers ever to step in the ring.
So what particularly did you like about that film? Like, how do you go about analyzing how you
know,
it's
almost like how Mike Tyson started. Those Latino boxers, just like Latino baseball players, they're really, really good. They're hungry, and it's a way to get out of the ghetto. And so it's almost like how Castamana trained Mike Tyson. Mike didn't have anything. He was a street, angry street kid, and Castamana helped form him with stuff. So having that Roberto character, Roberto Duran character with Robert De Niro working in that, it just worked well. Mm-hmm. And you could see the development of where they went to. And then they go back home after the big fight, and then all of a sudden they start squandering all their money, right? Mm-hmm. It happens because no one teaches them about the finances of things.
Right, and it's still happening today.
Still happens today.
And that's what I love about, you know, films and shows is that, you know, people say, well, sports, leave politics out of sports. Sports is nothing but politics, I believe. Mm-hmm. And then you have these heroes that are in that are telling the story of people that are in neighborhoods or in rough neighborhoods and how they survived out of that neighborhood through sports, through boxing, through, you know, jiu-jitsu or whatever. And they have that type of raw talent and that raw drive that has propelled them forward.
Yeah. You know, I think of, you know, did you know what you wanted to do when you were growing up? I think of the third film, actually the second film that hit me. The first film that I watched as a kid that I really liked in the theater was It's a Mad, 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 Mad World. You know, had every great comedian in it, Milton Berle. You know, the list went on and on with that. But the second movie that made an impact on me was Enter the Dragon, Bruce Lee.
Ah, yes.
Because of that, I became a martial artist. And now what we have opening this weekend is Birth of a Dragon. So again, think of karate. Go to the Karate Kid. You know, Ralph Macchio.
Yes.
Those are all sports films connected, because look what Bruce Lee did to the world of martial arts.
Yes, exactly.
You know, and then he had the celebrity factor coming in. You had Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. You had James Colburn, major actors. They all wanted to study with Bruce Lee because when Enter the Dragon came out, everybody wanted to be a martial artist, right?
Yes.
Everybody wanted that black belt. It's not easy.
It is not easy. Now, we can't talk about boxing films, of course, talk about Rocky.
Oh, yes.
So that's a franchise.
Well, you know, and Sage, Sylvester's deceased son, he used to come into my store all the time. And it was an honor to see him. And then, you know, in the old days, you just let them just come in and you didn't really talk to him. But they used to come in, they used to talk to me. So that's how I became friends with a lot of them. But, you know, think about that. You've got this famous dad who writes this great story in 1976 about Rocky and growing up. It's still inspirational. It is still good.
I love it.
And then having a fifth one, and then, you know, the latest one that came out 2 years ago, which was great.
Yeah. Well, which one of the Rocky films did you like the most?
I like the first one, and then I like the last one that came out because it was more of an updated, more cultural point of view of things, which was great. And then I like the one where Sly gets in there with Dolph Lundgren. You had to like that. U.S. against Russia. The underdog. And when you see those two and you see Dolph Lundgren, who's towering over Sylvester Stallone, that is great. You cannot get, you know, how could you not get hyped up over that?
Right. I know. You have to.
As a woman, what did you think of that?
I saw it. I don't even know how old I was. Maybe 7 or something. I don't remember. But I remember that guy's blonde hair. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the camera angle. I just remember the camera camera angle looking up at the guy, and he looks so huge.
Absolutely.
And I'm just like, wow, that is really neat. And then I was like, he's going to get killed.
Exactly. Remember when they touch gloves and they go like this and his hands don't move? That's like, wow, this is going to be good.
Yeah.
That's the kind of anticipation that you have that you want to see.
Yep.
Do you know Rocky is 41 or 42 years ago now?
No.
Think about that.
Yeah.
1976.
I know. And I'm just watching it, you know, a couple weeks ago, you know.
Yeah, but it still holds up.
It does.
And that's another thing. I always encourage people, even though it's hard to see a lot of the classic films, but that's why TCM, Turner Classic Movie Film Festival, was great. You can actually go see these great films on the big screen again. Mm-hmm. That's what makes it relevant. That's always good.
Now, talk about some other films that, or boxing films, maybe, that you feel that we need to know about.
Well, think of When We Were Kings.
Joel's gonna come out smoking, and I ain't gonna be joking. I'll be pecking and a poking, pouring water on his smoking. Then this might shock and amaze you, but I will destroy Joe Frazier.
Joe Frazier, Muhammad Ali. That's a great documentary on that and how the Thriller Manila came up. You have there's one another one I'm just thinking because I've got so many movies in my head.
I love Southpaw. I mean, I love. Well, that took me by surprise.
You like that Jake Gyllenhaal performance?
Yes. I was like, oh my gosh, this is it. And my husband was like, oh man, this film got me. You know, just the
were you touched emotionally from it too?
Yeah.
Yes.
The father daughter relationship. It was just like,
yeah, that stuff is important.
Yeah, and it's true. The boxing business is so corrupt.
Yeah. Now I will tell you, if you ever saw the movie that Ving Rhames did portraying Don King, Don King Made in America.
Oh,
that's an excellent film to see, and how Don came up from the streets of Cleveland, and you know he ended up murdering someone, but he becomes a boxing promoter.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And, you know, he gets his hands in everything.
Mm-hmm.
And also becomes a Republican.
Oh.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Again, politics.
Very interesting. Now, you talked to me about a film that we have not seen yet, but it was at a film festival.
Oh, Jim Brown.
Yes.
Yeah, A Mirror I Can. The history of, you know, Jim Brown's... his story of how he came up, you know, and then getting into the movies and then what he's doing and then getting involved with the gangs, wanting to get them out of the game life. It's called Jim Brown, A Mirror I Can.
The impact that we can have on society is tremendous.
The lady's name, her name escapes me from it. Aurora Farina is her name, the director. And we chose it for the Hollywood Film Festival. We chose that. Because it's a great film. And
why?
I want to, because it continues the legacy of what Jim Brown is wanting to do to get, you know, young kids out of the gang life and helping with his charity. He started going in the mid 70s into South L.A. and helping with things like that. Mm-hmm. And people don't realize that, because what happens is, if you're not seeing anybody doing this stuff, you just think they faded away. But mm-hmm. no, this is his charity. He's actually helping people stay out of trouble. And mm-hmm. then so there's years now of people coming up who are thanking him for staying out of trouble, which
right.
is great.
Right. And that is something that I highlight a lot is the behind the scenes. People are very vicious online because, you know, they can... Yeah, they don't have a face, so they can say whatever they want. They talk about LeBron. They just talk about things that they don't know about, and they don't talk about how, you know, thousands and millions of dollars are donated to charity or to help kids stay off the street or for scholarships and all the other things that they do off the court that is, you know, not sport, you know.
Yes, I've always said this. You know, I grew up in Waterford and then East Lyme, Nyanic, Connecticut. I grew up in a town of 7,000, and there was only 3 black families. So, one of the things that I learned, if it weren't for drum and bugle corps for me, which is my number one love, I could have easily been in jail or prison. So what's missing from school is musical instruments, the arts. That's usually the first thing to go.
Exactly.
And if you take that out, what do kids have to do? You don't have young black kids playing baseball anymore. They don't. So, you know, from South America, a lot of Latinos have come up because that's how they do. They play that in soccer. Mm-hmm. You know, there's really nobody coming up in the boxing world. The world championship is from someone from England now. But before that, for the last 10 years, he was from Ukraine, the Kanish brothers.
Right.
You know, so that's what it works. So what do? They all want to play basketball, be a rapper now, right? What's right. the chances of that?
But then online, you are all experts of the game, though you haven't played. Yeah.
Hey, the one person that I used to love to follow was Tiger Woods. I would be while the Lakers were winning, in the playoffs. I was the one guy in the corner. If you remember Dublin's. That place in Los Angeles?
Oh, yes, yes.
I would literally be in a corner watching Tiger Woods win the U.S. Open.
Wow.
Why the Lakers? Everybody was watching Lakers, and they had 100 TVs there. I had the one TV in the corner. I was watching Tiger Woods win while everybody else was watching the Lakers.
Wow. That's great.
That was me.
Yeah, yeah. Have you heard of the a documentary, D-O-K?
No.
About Doc Ellis? The one pitched a no-hitter trip.
Oh, yes, yes.
LSC.
No, I did see that. Yes.
How was
yes.
that one?
It was really, really good because it gives you an insight of why he was so mean as a pitcher.
Mm.
And a lot of it was also he pitched a no-hitter on LSD, if I remember correctly.
Yes, that's what he was.
I took some LSD when I took off with the car.
They're mobbing Doc Ellis on a no-hitter.
It was an ugly no-hitter. I got letters about it, but it was a no-no.
So I had to think about that. Yes. This is why I see everything.
Yes, I know. I'm like, okay, let's pick
now,
your brain some more.
I'm just saying, I have no notes in front of me, so everything is off the top of my head.
I know, which is like, okay. And Tin Cup, of course.
Kevin Costner.
Yes.
Excellent film.
And why do you say that? That's excellent.
Because Kevin is probably the best actor when it comes to doing movies in general. He knows what it's like to direct. But think of him, Tim Cup. Think of Bull Durham. He knows how to do sports films. He knows how to pick those scripts. He is good.
But have you noticed not a lot of people know how to direct sports films, like how you get the action in, like speaking of like boxing movies, how do you make it look like those actors really know how to box, like, or someone really knows how to play football?
Like, well, going into the boxing thing, think of what Sylvester Stallone did. Showing those when he was fighting for the first Rocky, and then eventually he ended up directing, mm-hmm. The next Rocky.
Mm-hmm.
He knew what had to be realistic. And, think of Frank Sinatra and all the celebrities going to watching the boxing in the mid-70s and Madison Square Garden and all that stuff. That stuff had to be real, so he knew what had to be real, how the angles and the angles and everything had to be thrown and had to be seen and to have that impact. It's really, really important.
Can you talk about the heart of a movie? So we have like Jerry Maguire. Mm-hmm.
Tell me you didn't sign because I'm still sort of moved by your "my word is stronger than oak" thing.
That was a blockbuster, right? So you have this story of this player, but also of his agent. Do you see a correlation between a movie becoming great or a blockbuster through the story rather than the action of being an athlete and showing how much action or what they do on the field or the court? Does that make sense?
Yes. What can happen is it's almost like when you're putting this together, you got someone who's writing this script. Well, I always tell people, you don't go to the movie to see a script. you go to the movie to be entertained, to get away from daily problems. I do my best thinking at theaters, believe it or not. Because I know for 2 hours, no one's going to bother me. I'm in a movie theater. But I still need to be entertained. I know what it's like to go pay to see that movie and not use my passes. Because if I go to the ArcLight, which is expensive to go to, I'm paying and then, I want to be entertained. This movie better be good. So it goes back to the home video days of if I tell you to go see a movie, I'm thinking of you parking. You got to get a babysitter.
Yes.
You might go to dinner. That's a lot of money. It's still the cheapest form of the most inexpensive form of entertainment. But still, it could come easily to $100 for two people really quickly. So that movie better be good. So when it comes to all that stuff like that, you want to make sure you're going to go see this good movie and you get the more bang for your buck.
Do you recall any movie, any sports movie that had such a significant impact of saving like lives? Like, I know this one gentleman I had on the show, he was saying that skateboarding saved his life.
Dogtown, you know, Dogtown NZ, which is the skateboarding movie that a woman directed, Penelope Spears, I believe it was. It's a great film on how the skateboarder started in Venice Beach.
Yes.
And I remember doing the interviews for that, and it was an honor to meet those guys because they didn't know. You know how they started skateboarding? Because they couldn't surf. That's how they started skateboarding. So they had to do something. So they, and then they ended up in empty pools doing all those things. Look where the world of skateboarding is now. Mm-hmm. It's huge business.
Huge.
Think of what Tony Hawk gets.
I know.
That's where it came from. Dogtown and Z-Boys. That's what it is.
Oh, yeah.
And that was on my list, too.
Yes, yes. And Bend It Like Beckham.
Oh, loved it.
I enjoyed that one.
Yeah. Keira Knightley, you know, doing that. You know, who's one of the most famous athletes in the world? Beckham.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Now, Kathryn Bigelow, if we can go back to, like, shooting now. So, Kathryn Bigelow, she did Point Break. She did Point Break. Was it?
I don't remember if she did that one. I'm thinking, well, obviously she just did Detroit, obviously.
Yes.
You know, and she won for Hurt Locker and things like that. You know, James Cameron's ex-wife.
Right.
So she learned a lot from being around James Cameron, which is good.
Yeah.
But, yeah, she knows that well, too.
Or he learned from her.
Well, exactly. You know, there's a reason that she won that Oscar. So, again, I think it's political, but she deserved it.
Yeah, yeah. That Hurt Locker was crazy.
Absolutely. Look where her career is now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, hats off to her.
Yeah. Point Break with the surfers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, again, when you see any of those documentaries, ESPN has done some great ones on the female surfer who lost her arm. What is she?
Yeah.
She's 17 right now.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent documentary. I actually wanted to see if we can get her for Hollywood at one point and we couldn't get her. But those films are inspirational, and they touch, and people love to do that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. What other movies or documentaries have you seen that really had an effect on, I think, maybe the sports industry?
I'm thinking of, and again, I'm thinking off the top of my head. When you think, I'm going to go to Ken Burns.
Oh, yes.
When you think of Ken Burns, the history of baseball, there's a segment, and I think it's the seventh inning, called Only the ball was white.
Wow.
And he talks about the black athletes coming in at that point.
No, I never had an idea of major leagues. I never had an idea. All I wanted to do was play baseball. And I believed that I could play baseball in the black league.
You know, you think of 42, you think of Jackie Robinson, you think of running for your life or something like that on Jesse Owens.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, you think of what Muhammad Ali went through, you know, what the guy didn't box for 4 or 5 years in his prime,
mm-hmm.
what he could have done, sticking up for his rights not to go to Vietnam War. All those things, and believe it or not, they're all black athletes. Not that I chose it like that, but mm-hmm. just in general, those are really impactful, good films and documentaries.
Yeah, I think with Jesse Owens, the Australian athlete, he stood up for him, and he was totally banned from doing any sports when he came back to Australia, and he just, you know, he was like, no, I'm not going to take back my words for, you know.
Yes, yeah, there's always those great stories like that, too. If you remember the three black athletes when they raised their fist at the 1968 mm-hmm. Olympics in Mexico City, you know, that's a great documentary of why they did it. Again, going back to the mid to late 60s, that impactful period of U.S. history.
Yes, it is. And that is the thing. It's like, if you go back and look at the history of sports and all the things that have happened, it has opened up so many minds to inclusion, to, hey, maybe, you know, this person isn't bad. I'll invite, you know, someone of a different culture over for dinner, you know?
Well, there's a scene in 42 where one of the white players says, I just got this letter of hate mail because I'm playing with Jackie Robinson. And Branch Rickey was Harrison Ford. But he goes, oh, you got that one letter? Well, look at these. There's three bags over here of hate mail that Jackie Robinson's got that he doesn't know that he's received. And then when the guy hears that and sees that, he goes,
"What are those?" "Well, I tell you what they aren't. They aren't letters from the Jackie Robinson fan club."
"Oh, I didn't know that." He goes, "Nobody knows."
Yeah.
And then he goes, "Here's one." He says, "Send this guy back. Why is he here? He can't stay at this hotel. If he shows up, he'll be shot. His family will be shot." And then all of a sudden, this is when the, you know, that impactful scene comes when the teammates start to rally around him.
Oh, yeah. See, but that's the thing. A lot of people try to shield people from what reality is. And the reality is, yeah, there are people, very hateful people out there. But then once we come together as a community, we can, I don't want to sound like, but we can put our energy toward good and make sure that people, you know, if you change one person's mind, that's great, you know.
Great movie, 42. You know, one of the other things like that, there's a great documentary on Hank Aaron when he played for the Milwaukee Brewers and when they won their World Series and what he went through. And then he ends up breaking Babe Ruth's all-time home run record of what he went through.
What a marvelous moment for baseball. What a marvelous moment for Atlanta and the state of Georgia. What a marvelous moment for the country and the world. A black man is getting a standing ovation in the Deep South for breaking a record of an all-time baseball idol.
That's interesting. Remember the two kids running around the bases with him?
Yeah.
Well, nobody knew what kind of threats he was like. If you hit that home run, we're going to shoot you from the stands.
Right. Nobody wanted him to beat his record.
Exactly.
Babe Ruth was like the man.
Uh-huh.
This is ESPN LA 710. I'm LaFern Cusack speaking with the chief correspondent for Hollywood Film Festival and owner of Movie Review and More, Brian Sebastian. Now, Brian, if you can talk about one of the films that your most favorite film, it doesn't have to be sports, you know, a sports film, I know. But what is your most favorite film?
Well, I like to play chess. Think of this.
Oh.
Searching for Bobby Fischer.
Yes.
Or Fresh. You know, if I'm in an inspirational mood and I want to be entertained, I think of Black Hawk Down. I think of Hacksaw Ridge. If I'm in a thinking mood or maybe I want to be entertained, it could be Babe. Remember the Babe, the talking
yeah.
pig?
Yeah.
Well, I picked that to win the Oscar.
Did you? Why?
Because it was entertaining for families. And there was two pig films that came out at the same time. Babe wasn't a Disney film. It was Universal. Disney had their pig film came out, which no one saw.
Oh, really?
Because Babe was the better film.
Oh, interesting.
Uh-huh.
But why do you choose these particular films? Like, you categorize them if I want to think of film and this. Like, why those films? Like, I know in my head, I like certain Prince songs. What's my favorite song? Well, it depends on what album it is. On this album, is you know.
So if I think of Prince, I think of Housequake, Sign of the Times.
Yes.
Which you can't find online because Prince took everything off. Now, you know, I still can't find it online, but I think of Sign of the Times in 1987. And where I was then, Prince used to come in the Tower Video at that point. And then he used to have Grand Slam, the nightclub downtown
yes.
LA. This is where I ran into all these people. So a lot of them made an impact on me at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And then he ends up winning an Oscar for his song, you know, When Doves Cry.
Yes.
You know, in a Golden Globe.
Yes.
And then what did you see Prince doing all the time? He would actually show up at the shows. Remember, because he was still shy, but he was showing up.
He would show up.
Yeah.
Wow.
And he would give a performance.
Yeah. He loved that.
Yeah, he did. But, you know, all those things were great like that. We went through a great times here in California living like that. But there's also a great documentary. It's a 7.5-hour film. It's not considered a sports film, but it deals with one of the iconic people in sports, O.J. Simpson.
Mm-hmm.
It's called O.J. Made in America.
Mm-hmm.
I picked that to win that Oscar, and it did.
And the Oscar goes to...
Now it was 7.5 hours, and there was five people who we saw this, and, you know, we were all prominent critics. And we saw it on a Saturday. It started at 10. We finished at 5.
Oh, my gosh!
With 2 15-minute intervals. But this story was so impactful, and what was going on with Jim Brown, Muhammad Ali, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, changing his name and all that stuff. And where was O.J. Simpson? He was at USC. He was non-threatening at that point, and he was starting to break records. That's why he, you know, And that's why it's called O.J. Made in America, because he was safe for white America.
I realized in my 9 years here that I was a good guy on the street, but I could have been a better Christian, and my commitment to change it was to be a better Christian.
He was non-threatening. You know, what was there, maybe 9 black students at USC at that point? You know, where was USC? He had Watts on one side, and you had whatever else on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. Yeah.
So when you saw that movie, why did you pick it to win?
Because it tells the behind the scenes of how he was groomed to be this athlete growing up in Northern California, coming from a troubled family, going to USC to play football, and then being groomed to go play for the Buffalo Bills, and then breaking all these records. I mean, people who saw him run will tell you to this day, he ran through daylight, just like Jim Brown, just like Walter Payton and everybody like that. But to see his story of getting he was the first athlete to have endorsements. Think about Hertz and all that stuff like that. And then he ends up in the movies.
Mm-hmm.
Airplane.
Yeah.
You know, I can't see this, but he was up for the role of Terminator, if you can believe that.
Really? I did not know that.
Yeah.
Arnold.
I know.
So picking that film to win over the others that were in the category, you say that that film stood out for you to say, yeah, this is going to be a winning film or winning documentary because it had a bigger scope than the other films that it was in the category?
Well, remember, I'm watching almost everything out there. I get upset if I can't see something or if something's not sent to me on a link. A lot of times, see how this system is set up? There's 2 monitors in front of me. I have 2 computers set up. I have my tablet. I have my phone here. And sometimes I have a big TV. So I'm watching 5 things at once. I'm very good at multitasking.
Wow.
So picking films that come from around the world and that are submitted to a film festival, usually you only have people will watch 10 minutes, 20 minutes, if that. No, I watched the whole film. And I verify, people will tell you, I watched the whole film because you may be at the end of a film, but you may be the best thing in that film. So I'm going to remember that person is good. I want to know more about that person in that film. So I've done that going back to home video. I watched the entire film. I will always watch the entire film. I know people can't do that. But I also get down to start doing push-ups and sit-ups and crunches in the middle of stuff if the film is bad, just to throw it so I can get through it. I do. But that's me doing it because, remember, I can see different things that people can't see.
So how do you review a film that is really, really bad?
There's a rating system. You know, how's the cinematography? How's the score? How are the individual performances? I'm always looking at it by that. Will someone be touched by it? You know, if it's a woman's film, well, will a guy want to go see this? Have you ever seen like Beaches? Remember the film Beaches, Bette Midler? You know, all right. Guys didn't want to go see that film. You know what? But they dragged their significant other, the women, didn't they?
Yeah.
Those guys, and what guy wanted to admit that they were crying at the end of Beaches? Well, I did. It was a good film. But women had to drive their man to go see this film because they wanted to see it.
Mm-hmm.
Or else nothing was going to happen later that night.
Yeah. Did you hear about, I think it came out in Deadline or something a few weeks ago or maybe a month ago, about how now studios think that they're losing their base audiences of males, 12 to 20, whatever that is, because they aren't going to the movies anymore, or they don't know how to attract that, you know, those millennials anymore?
Well, that's true. And again, it's no difference from someone going to the old video store. You have to get in your car to go to the movie. You have to get in your car to go back in the day to a video store. Once you got there, you saw all these videos. Wow. It was like going to Disneyland.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, wow, this is good. I've never seen this movie. I can pick it up and I can look at it. Now, where do you go? Redbox, if you're lucky. But they, you know, they only have, 100 titles in there, but they're mainly new releases.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so where do you go? You go to Netflix to see what you can see, but you can't pick it up. You got to read the description. Do I want to see this? Okay, let's. And then they're adding so many movies that people get overwhelmed. So I always do this. I always tell people, go out and support your arts. It's like still going to go see a play. It's like going to go see a concert. Go see that movie, because not everything is opening in your neighborhood. And sometimes things open limited. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're not sure if it's going to make any money. So, hey, yeah. We're going to open it for 7 days and hopefully we're going to make some money or we're going to yank it.
I know.
That's what happens.
It is so hard to make a film and to get a film to the screens and then you get limited release.
Absolutely.
It's just like, oh, so maddening.
You know how many people reach out to me from around the world on my LinkedIn or even Facebook because of the Hollywood logo, the Hollywood brand? They go, I'm making a movie. I'm like, well, who's not making a movie? You know, and it's just like I tell Andrew, everybody's got a phone that takes a photo. That doesn't mean you're a good photographer, right?
Exactly.
There are people who can't take a photo on an iPhone.
Yeah.
In a setup that is good. They just can't. So, you know, everybody say, I'm going to do a reality show or I'm going to make a film. Really? All right. Let me know when it's done.
And then I'll watch it and review it.
Absolutely. And I'm going to tell you, and I'm going to be very honest about it.
Yeah. Tell us about one of the people that you've interviewed that was your best interview on Hollywood Films Festival or movie review and more.
One of the best interviews I did was with Oprah in a parking lot. So imagine this. I hadn't met Oprah until 2005. I was supposed to meet her before for the movie Beloved, and then Disney wouldn't fly me to the studio. So imagine this. She did a TV series in 05, a TV movie called What God Made or something like that. It had Halle Berry in it.
What you doing, Jane?
I'm watching God.
And I just remember, I'm going to be the only one to get this interview by Oprah. So what I did is once she got off stage, I knew where she was going to go. I beat her out there with her security detail. I'm walking with her in a security detail. And all of a sudden, she's got all female security detail in the middle of these SUVs. So I have a big, great photo that I think I showed you, I sent to you with the SUVs. So it's me and Oprah talking. And over this side, it's 50 press people trying to get an interview with her. I'm like, no, they're not going to get it. So remember disposable cameras?
Yes.
We weren't supposed to take photos with celebrities. Mm-hmm. Well, I tossed my camera to someone and they took the photo and she goes, how do I do this? I'm like, what do you mean you don't know how to take a photo? I'm like, take the photo, because she had to go.
Yes.
And that was the same day that we were doing Desperate Housewives Party over at the Universal lot. It was great. That was one of the best interviews that I did in a parking lot. And that's why I tell people, you never know, just when you think you're going to do it here, you may not get it there. It may be as they're stepping out of a limousine. And that's how I've gotten a lot of my interviews. But one of the best ones I did was with Russell Crowe for Gladiator. Russell would come in and he would lock the door because he loved talking to the radio roundtable people. At one point, it was 23 of us down to like 7. And he would just sit there and talk to us for 43 minutes.
Really?
Yeah. And so because Russell didn't like doing TV interviews and he didn't like talking to online and press, but he loved us radio roundtable people. And that's how the BFCA started, Broadcast Film Critics Association started.
Oh,
so
really?
He went on to win Gladiator because of us. He loved us because we loved promoting him because he told great stories.
Yes.
And then I had a great interview with Charlton Heston. I talked to him on civil rights because I knew this.
Tell us about that. That's people interesting.
Forgot. Well, people forgot that Charlton Heston marched with Martin Luther King. So it was for the re-release of A Touch of Evil. So he was there and Janet Leigh was there. There was only 10 people doing TV interviews. Obviously, I was the only black guy doing it. So I said, I bet you no one asked this question. What was it like to march with Martin Luther King? His eyes lit up. Because you're thinking of Charlton Heston in the later days, mm-hmm. you know, when he's 75, holding a gun with NRA.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you forgot. Tony Bennett, Marlon Brando, Charlton Heston, Sammy Davis, all those people were there. The photos are there of him marching. And his eyes lit up. He goes, that was an honor to do that. And it was fun. And mm-hmm. so we had a great conversation.
And what else did he talk about? Did he talk about those, you know, an impact or...
Yes, because, you know, in the turbulent 60s, he was impacted by that. Going through the South, at that point, he wasn't going as a celebrity. He was going with a lot of minorities of what they had to go through at that point. So he's seeing it through a different way. Mm-hmm. This is not Chuck Heston going down by himself to promote a film. He's going down to help promote civil rights at that point. Whole completely different ballgame at that
point. So how do you feel or how do you see did he change the climate around that time?
By his celebrity, you know, you're thinking of what he saw,
mm-hmm.
you know, in Selma, Alabama, through a whole different way of thinking. You know, at one point, the people liked him. They're like, well, what are you doing over there with those N people? You know, he's like, well, these people are my friends and I'm helping fight for their rights. So he got a chance to see that. Yeah. So he went from this A-list celebrity at this point to, oh, maybe we don't like him because he's hanging out with them now.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. So when you see something like that, you get a whole different way of thinking.
Very much so. What other interesting interviews did you...
Siegfried and Roy. When Siegfried and Roy came down here, they brought the little white tiger.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, I have this great interview with them and me talking to Siegfried and Roy. And I'll never forget, Roy said to me, he goes, "Well, young man, that's a very good interview." I'm like, "Well, I tend to do very good interviews, Mr. Roy." And he goes, "Well, we like you. You got to come up to Vegas and visit us." Okay, are you inviting me? I'm coming. So we did. So that's one I lost everything in storage. But I have some of those interviews like that. Mm-hmm. And they were classic because now you don't get those interviews like that.
Yeah. Does it seem like a lot of people that are in the film and film industry or entertainment industry don't want to do interviews as much?
No, it's not that. You're always supposed to promote the film, but you developed a rapport. So for me, Ron Brewington, it was Ron Brewington. He was with American Urban Radio. And he was with Associated Press. So he had two of the biggest outlets. So he was invited to everything. And then, you know, I knew this. Once you take one of those outlets away, you're nothing because it's about the outlet. So for me, I always went in underneath Movie Reviews and More, and I had to build it up. So I was always the small guy. But what I did is I became friends with the publicists. So they liked me. Mm-hmm. Some of them probably felt sorry for me. But you know what? I'm still here and everybody's gone.
Oh,
there's very, very few people. So now that you have bloggers... And mommy bloggers, well, mommy bloggers, they started out of their home because they're moms. So the studios would fly them in for certain films, and then they'd give good, well, you put them up at the Four Seasons, and you feed them nicely, well, they're going to say nice things, right?
Yeah.
Well, we live here in Los Angeles, so that's not how we work.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about the business. What, you're going to promote a bad film? Am I going to waste your time to tell you to go see a bad film? No. It's not my job to criticize a film. There's enough people out there. I'm going to tell you the good films to go see, just like I did in home video.
Yeah. Do you remember the best athlete in a film? You know, everybody wants to be an actor or a rapper. Or
yeah.
Do you know that, like, the crossover? Because, like, a lot of athletes are crossing over from, you know, being a basketball player to a rapper to an actor.
The best athlete is The Rock, Dwayne Johnson. Because in 2001, I think I sent you that picture for The Mummy Returns. Nobody knew who he was unless you were a wrestling fan, which is what I was.
Mm.
So all I knew at that point is I'm going to get a picture. I've got The Rock's book. And if you remember this, if you're fans or whatever, if you got someone's got a book, get that book. They're not going to say no to taking a picture with you in their book.
Oh.
So I had his book, and I had something else that said WWE on it for The Mummy Returns. So there's a photo, and this is when he had a long neck, and he was just like starting to lean down from wrestling. And it was his first film. And in the back, there's a publicist that's hiding off of this disposable camera. Again, you weren't supposed to take photos with celebrities. And I'm like, no, this is The Rock. This is 01 at that point. So you can't. So he goes, "Is it okay if I take a photo?" Then the publicist goes, "No, we don't have time." I said, "Hell with that. No, I'm getting my photo." Now, imagine if I didn't get that photo. Look where he is now. He made $86 million last year.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
Look where he is.
My son loves Moana.
Yeah.
And then every time his song comes on, I sing, and Davey's like, "Mom, you really like him, don't you?" I was like, "Oh, yes, I do, David."
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of people. You know, but you got to give credit to Danny Garcia, too, his ex-wife and still manager, because they have a great working relationship, and I like them as people in general. But if you watched him when he was wrestling, he learned what he's doing by being on the mic.
Yeah.
He just had that charisma. But he really made his name as a wrestler.
Yeah.
As a villain, as the bad guy. And then he turned over to the good guy. Because then you had Stone Cold Steve Austin. You had D-Generation X, Triple X. And those matches were historical.
Yeah. And the film where he had the little girl. He was taking care of the little girl. Put sparkles on the football.
See, that was funny.
Yeah.
"I put sparkles on it."
No way.
No, those were great. But look where he is. You know, he's got Jumanji coming out. A Robin Williams remake. Oh, Robin Williams was one of our best interviews, too. Because Robin would come in and he would lock the door. And he knew that, you know, because in radio roundtables, you need a clean sound bite. So you didn't jump in until they finished their sentence. So he would come in and do everything to make us laugh. And once we all laughed, he goes, "Okay, now that I got us out of system, first question."
Wow.
And we just had so much fun.
Tell us about the stories that he told.
Oh, I made Robin Williams cry. One of my favorite charities is Doctors Without Borders, because it was Robin Williams' favorite charity. So he used to go to Iraq and Afghanistan to entertain the troops all the time. So I started to ask him about something about that for a smaller film. It was like The Night Listener, based on a true story out of San Francisco. And then he started to tear up. And I go, well, this is interesting. He goes, I'm sorry to make you cry. How often do you see Robin Williams cry? The answer is you never saw him cry. You always saw him on. So I go, I made Robin Williams cry. And then when he died, he made me cry.
Mm. Why was that film so important to him?
It wasn't the film. It was the charity. It was that no one ever asked him about his favorite charity and what Doctors Without Borders meant to him. That's what it was.
Yeah.
So I picked that charity up because of that, because of him.
So what was his thoughts on that charity of what he's there to accomplish?
Because he saw things when he went to go entertain the troops overseas. He saw what they were going through. So it's almost like the old Bob Hope days. Well, Bob Hope would bring women, you know, so the guys could see the women. And then he would tell jokes, you know, in the late 60s. Well, Robin went by himself. He didn't announce he was going. He was just going to go entertain the troops. And he made them all laugh. Because he, you know, you never know when you're out there serving your country, if you're going to make it back.
No, I know.
That's what happened. Okay. And that's one of the things he liked to do. And then also, you know, some people know this, a lot of people don't. In Robin Williams' contract, he had a clause where anything that he worked on, there was at least 10 to 20 people who were homeless had to have jobs to work on that set.
Wow.
Yeah.
That brings up, I heard an NPR story yesterday about this show on CISO, but now it's canceled. Take My Wife. Have you seen that? Or Please Take My Wife?
Oh, yes. Okay, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So their mission was to employ more women,
yep,
more minorities, get them in. So the writing round table is, you know, there's women at the table. Mm-hmm. And it's not about being against men. It's like giving the women an opportunity to be at the head of the table and writing scripts.
Yeah, and it's still that problem. I mean, you hear the stories. Mm-hmm. It wasn't Blackish, but it was something else like that. They're out there like that, which, mm-hmm, I find quite interesting. And a lot of people just talk about it behind the scenes still.
Yeah.
But they're there.
Yeah.
I mean, you could hear about it from Norman Lear.
I know.
You know, and then Good Times. You know, it was a documentary on Good Times with, you know, where they had one writer, and Bill Duke, mm-hmm, was one of the writers who's now a successful filmmaker.
Yeah, yeah. And Bill Duke, he's doing a lot of great things with our community as well, and, mm-hmm, and the kids, and getting them into production and giving, yep, them scholarships. He's doing a lot of great things with kids. So, okay, we have a few minutes left, so let's talk about some other movies that you feel that made a great impact with our society.
Well, let me ask you that question first. What do you think? And I'll tell you.
Oh, well, I really like the Jesse Owens movie. I mean,
Jesse Owens film was good, yes.
That really, it got me at the end because, I mean, we're all fighting for something, but at the end, the war started.
Yep.
And my grandfather died in that war in Germany, and we still don't know how he died or where he died, and they don't want to give us any information. He was a Buffalo Soldier.
Oh, yes.
And
they haven't made that movie yet.
The Buffalo Soldiers?
Not yet.
Yeah. Well, they've made a couple.
Not the impactful one yet.
Yeah, not yet.
I'll tell you the one I'm thinking of, the Tuskegee Airmen.
Oh.
Because those B-52 bombers didn't want to fly without the Tuskegee Airmen on their sides.
I got men whose lives are my responsibility up there, sir. And I want the 332nd as our escort. Colored boys?
And not one of their planes was shot down. That's the testament to, you know, you having a segregated army, mm-hmm, you know, in 1942. But you know what? There's a scene in there that goes, well, I don't know who they are, but I want them to escort me as a bomber. Because they knew the Tuskegee Airmen were great.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of the films that are showing our history and showing things that happen, even though like it's a story and there may be things that may be embellished or whatever, a lot of people aren't reading nowadays.
Yeah. See, I used to read USA Today and Variety daily. And so that used to be like my Starbucks.
Yeah.
It was a lot.
So those type of movies that tell good stories of what happened and these heroes that go are forgotten.
Yeah. I mean, again, if you fail to pay homage to the past, there is no future. And it's true. And you can see that now in politics.
What do you feel about that film that's coming out? It was a novel and they made it into a TV show about slavery. Like if
oh, yeah, still, that is Confederate.
Yeah.
On HBO. I think it'll be interesting. I'd like to see what they do with that. Because, again, you have these what if Germany won World War II.
Right.
What if?
Right. They had, yeah, because that's the man in the high tower.
Mm-hmm.
They were talking about that. So people are all up in arms because, oh, you're changing history. The guy who wrote it, who's white, is like, it was a novel. I have nothing to do with the TV show.
Yes,
I have nothing to do
exactly.
with that show. And I'm like, it's a story.
Mm-hmm.
But people are so, I don't
well,
know.
Well, here's the thing. Like, let's see what happens with it. I mean, you don't get up. I don't like when people get up in arms on something. It's like remaking Gone with the Wind. You know, they're going to do The Wizard. Well, they have. They did The Wiz and they did a couple Wizard of. But it's not like the 1939 version.
It's not filmed yet.
But so let's see what happens. And then if you don't like it, don't watch it.
Right.
It's on HBO. Right? Not everybody has HBO. So what are you going to do? But HBO stuff is great. Great. And I watch the stuff, you know, I'm caught up on everything. You know, they got Deuce coming out with, oh my God, he was at our film festival too. I can't remember his name. But yeah, the world of the porn world in the 1970s. James Franco. Yeah, it's
okay.
Called Deuce. Because I started watching it last night on streaming on HBO. And I love HBO. And I love Showtime.
You said you had an interview with him.
Yeah, James is interesting. James is doing a lot of things. He did this movie called F for Franco, which was not a very good film. I watched it twice to make sure it wasn't. And it was 2 hours, almost 3 hours long. If you can imagine that, submitted to a film festival. We accepted it.
Why?
Because we wanted James Franco to come in to support it. And we were going to show his art.
Oh, yeah.
Because he has art, too.
But that's the thing. It's like a lot of artists, they do things that may be for their effort. They don't care if it's going to be a blockbuster or not. They want to get that art out.
Well, obviously, HBO paid him a lot of money because this is his series. You know, it's called Deuce.
Oh, okay.
Oh, and then I have to tell you this. There's a good documentary on Whitney Houston. Not that she's in sports, but, you know, airs on Showtime.
Yes.
You know, I can't, you know, let me be me.
Mm.
It's very, very good. You want to know how she started. So those things are inspiring when it comes to everything like
they
that.
They are inspiring. Okay, so let's go down your top five sports movies that are a must-see.
Off the top of my head.
Off the top of your head, because
so,
you're a computer.
Any Given Sunday.
Really?
Any Given Sunday was one. What do you mean, why? That's a good film. Directed by Oliver Stone. Jamie Foxx is in it. Jim Brown is in it. Dennis Quaid is in it. It's very good on football, what they go through.
Oh.
You know, Hoop Dreams.
Yes.
Remember Hoop Dreams?
Hoop Dreams.
I picked that one to win Best Documentary. Field of Dreams.
Okay.
You got to like Field of Dreams. And you've got to like, because I love it. Oh, there's a movie called The Wrestler, Mickey Rourke, on wrestling.
Oh, my God.
That was a really, really good film. League of Their Own.
Yes.
Murder Ball, about people who are physically handicapped and they play dodgeball.
Yes.
In their wheelchairs.
Yes.
You know, remember Cool Runnings?
Yes.
Cool Runnings is a good one. True Story, the Jamaican bobsledding team.
Yes.
Who would have figured that one out? So, you know, remember the Titans, Rudy, Seabiscuit, and the list goes on and on.
Yeah, Seabiscuit was really good.
Remember William H. Macy as the announcer?
Yeah. Yeah, League of their Own, they just had their anniversary this past month. Or whatever.
Yeah, it's still a classic. There's no crying in baseball, as Tom Hanks would say to me.
Yeah. Well, this has been truly fun and a fun experience to have you on, Brian. Again, Brian Sebastian, chief correspondent for a Hollywood Film Festival and owner of Movie Review and More. And if we want to find out all the movies that you're reviewing, how can we do that, Brian?
Well, I always send people to my YouTube channel because it's more visual these days, especially kids. You can look up everything on your phone. So it's always youtube.com/movie reviews, the letter and more. So Movie Reviews and More, all one word. And you'll see original content. There's no third-party music. There's no movie trailers in there. There's all individuals. There's a section on fitness. There's a section on wrestling. I'm putting up the music section on that. And then you'll see the LA Talk Radio stuff that we do, our radio shows, shot on our green screen. So you'll see a lot of interviews. There's a thing with Hulk Hogan and Layla Ali, you know, that I did. I mean, I think that's my number one video, what I did it 9 years ago. So
cool.
It's got 113,000 views.
Awesome.
With no promotion. And people still click onto it these days. I don't know why. It's only 5 minutes.
That sounds like my show. No promotion, but hey, we're doing
well,
okay.
Well, yeah, that's what happens. But that's how you can find me. And then LA Talk Radio on Tuesdays at 5 p.m. PST time. I like the, it's just kind of like The View. I've always said it's a mix-up between Howard Stern, Larry King, if you remember Larry King, and Oprah.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
You're coming on it. You just don't know it yet.
Okay. I'm there. Wherever you want me, I'm there. All right. Thank you again, Brian Sebastian.
ESPN LA 710.